My name's Dan Williams from Oklahoma City. I'm a businessman. I work in a life insurance company and heading up sort of our international operation. And so I have the privilege of traveling throughout Southeast Asia, working on developing joint ventures with insurance-related activities. And I'm married 34 years to Cherry, who's not here with me this weekend. Not a big surprise. And this is a workshop that we do together entitled Improving Your Lifetime Partnership. And we're thinking about the ideas of marriage, having this idea of a partnership. So this whole time together, I'm really going to talk to you about marriage being a partnership between two people. And I want you to think about it. And so this handout I've given you this morning is a fairly complete version of my notes. And so as you have time to think about some of the things I've talked about this morning, things perhaps that we're going to talk about together, you can take that handout home and you can do some of the exercises in it. I'll introduce those to you this morning. You may want to write this down because it's not in your notes, but some of the exercises we do is from a website called realrelationships.com. So the material that you have in your handout that's been printed for you is all available to you free of charge at the website www.realrelationships.com. So I'll be using some of their material this morning just to kind of stimulate you to think about this most important relationship that we have with our wives. And really what I'd like to do is to kind of think about this morning as being more of an opportunity to stimulate you to thinking about our relationship. And to get us started thinking, because I know it's early in the morning, I have a couple cartoons from Kathy, which will probably lighten us up a little bit, and I'll read them for you. Here Kathy and her boyfriend are sitting together, newly married, and so she says, "Ock, you're dumping all the silverware in the drawer together." And he says, "I've always dumped all the silverware in the drawer together." And she says, "I didn't think you would still be like that." He says, "I've always been like this. Why wouldn't I still be like this?" And she says, with this contemplative look on her face, "I thought you were just being like that until we got married, and then you would start being the way you really are." And of course, he says, "This is the way I really am." And she says, "Yes, well, maybe it's the way you really were, but now you can be your other way." And of course, he says, "What other way?" And she says, "The way I was planning on you being." And she gives him a big kiss. And he responds, "Ock, you're dumping fantasies on me." And she says, as she's leaving, "I've always dumped fantasies on you." And so that's a good cartoon about expectations in marriage, isn't it? Some thoughts there. And then let's take a look at this one. Again, a Kathy cartoon. The mother says, "First you're supposed to build a life together, Kathy. Then you're supposed to build a family together. And then after you're deeply connected and committed, then and only then do you build furniture together." And Kathy screams, "We did everything backwards." And he remarks, "Don't start with me again." And so, you know, she's got some issues there. Little cartoon from Zitz. "What is that around your neck, Jeremy?" "This is my flash drive. It holds my memories, my calendar, my photos, my address book. It's my life backup." Wife says, "Maybe you should get one of those." He says, "Nonsense, that's what I have you around for." So, just some things that get us started thinking about marriage and thinking about some of the misconceptions that we have. And I talked a little bit about the goal of the workshop, three anchors that Cherry and I feel is important to talk about. This is really an expression of our journey in our marriage, so it's not really intended to be a complete subject on this, but these are the things that we feel is important in our lives. It's been helpful in thinking about a lifetime partnership. And if you'll turn in your handout to this chart that's in the back, you'll find it at the very back of your handout. It's attached. This is one of those documents that you can get off of realrelationships.com. I'd like to sort of start our time with an idea here about communication and finding strengths in communication. So if you have that handy, what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to think on your own for just a moment about a couple things. One is, how are you doing in communicating with one another? Where are you developing strengths as you talk to each other and as you communicate with each other? And part of this is that it's not just your strengths, it's your wife's strength as well. And so this little handout here, what I'd like you to do is take a minute, and I'd like you to go down it, and I'd like you to put an X or a check or something like that in any one of these four columns, all right? There's a columns for you. So if you think you have a strength in that area of communication, then put a check next to the item. So, for example, the first one is, who does this particularly well? Listening without interrupting. So as you think about your marriage relationship, think about who does that really well. Is that a strength that you have? Is that a strength that your wife has? Is that a strength that you both have? Or is that an area where neither one of you have a strength? So take just a minute and go through this, and we won't have time to do all of it, but I want to give you a couple minutes just to kind of go through it and kind of preview the list. All right, well, that gives you at least a start on it. What I would encourage you to do, the reason I told you the website to go to for these, is let me encourage you to download these little handouts like I've given you, and what a great exercise it is to sit down with your sweetheart and say, let's talk about these things. Let's talk about who has strengths in these areas. And Jerry and I did this together, and we found it to be an enriching and deepening part of our communication because we're peeling back the onion a little bit, and we're getting to some content. Now, why would we start off with the idea of where do we have some strengths? Why should we start off in that? Why not go right after the heart of the matter, and that is where we have weaknesses? Why take some time and start thinking about strengths? Building on the positive, thanks, Keith. That's a good idea. What are we naturally inclined to think about as men? Negative things. Yeah, we don't need any encouragement to start thinking about all the problems we have and all the weaknesses because our natural inclination is to go around and fix those things. So we're going to start off talking a little bit about where we have strengths, and then when you identify where one or more of you have strengths, then you can build on those. Now, why think about strengths of your spouse? Why not only think about strengths of yourself? Why think about the strengths in communication that your wife has? Why should we think about that? How much of a partnership are you? 0%, 50%, 100%. How much of a partnership are you? You're 50%, right? Because there's two people in a marriage, and so you're half of the team. And so the other half of the team has some identifiable strengths themselves. So you think about some of these things, look at some of the things and see what maybe stands out to you. Giving full attention, controlling emotions appropriately, thinking clearly before speaking. Thinking clearly before speaking. That means we have it in the right order. You know, what comes out of my mouth a lot of times is the words, and then I'm trying to find a way to back up from that. But thinking clearly before we speaking. And probably one that has been for me a little bit of a goal more recently is this one, coming across personally warm. Now that's a real valuable communication skill and tool when you want people to identify with what you're talking about, particularly your wife, as you're talking about something perhaps of a conflict nature, or you are talking about something that's tense, if you have the skill of being able to lower the tone of your voice and speak at a level which communicates calmness and composure, and then it's easier to talk about some of those things. Some of these you guys will have, both of you will have strengths. And when I have identified an area where Cherry has a strength, I try to appeal to that strength. I try to rely on that strength and utilize it in our communication with each other. And we're going to talk this morning about blending together. And that's a concept that I think is really important in lifetime partnership, and that is blending the uniqueness of one another. And so we'll talk a little bit about blending. What is the nature of partnerships? Where does partnerships and the idea of partnerships come from? And I've, in your notes, given you the passages I'd like to think about, but I'm going to have you this morning circle some of those things, because I don't want you so much writing down stuff as I want you to accent the things that God speaks to you about. And so from a 30,000-foot level, from a 30,000 level view, what is this partnership that God has created for man and woman to enjoy? And in the middle of that paragraph, in Genesis 1, 25 to 31, in the center of it, it starts off this way. And God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him, male and female. And that is where it stops, in the singular. Notice that. From this point on, we're not talking about Adam or the man any longer. He created them, and God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and rule over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the sky and over every other created thing that moves on the earth." And I want to make some observations about what that means, but what I want us to think about is that's the very beginning, that's the very origin of our partnership relationship. It's not Adam by himself, it is Adam and Eve, and it's referred to as them. So right now we're starting to look at this idea of this partnership, and what are some of the things that we can note about it? Well, one is that God has designed lifetime partnerships. He put Adam and Eve together in order for them to be one, and that is a lifetime partnership that God had in mind. Secondly, God created man and woman in his image, and that was intended to have unbroken fellowship and companionship. And this one I really like, and I think it's worth you circling or underlining it in your notes. Creation resulted in a lifetime objective for the couple. Adam and Eve weren't left to do whatever they wanted to do. God gave them a mission. He gave them a purpose. It belonged to them. It didn't belong to him. It belonged to them as a couple. And so they began this life together. And then God concludes all of that after his created process is completed. He says it's a very good thing. And God views the lifetime partnership between a man and a woman as a very good thing. And that's a 30,000 view level. And then we come down to chapter 2 of Genesis, where God fills in some of the gaps. He gives us some of the details, and he kind of zeros in on a lot closer. And in Genesis 2:18, Lord says, "It's not good for man to be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him." And this isn't about what man thinks about the creative process. This is about what God did and his views of this union between a man and a woman. And God says that it's not good for man to be by himself. And he's saying, well, God knows that, you know. And it's not good. That's God's idea about it. We need partnership. We need companionship, because that's the way God's engineered us to be in a marriage relationship with another person. And then secondly, God did not consult man for the criteria for establishing the helpmeet suitable for him. He didn't ask you or my opinion about what were the qualities that were needed. But you know, when Adam took a look at the created result in Genesis 2:24, he got it. He knew that what God had done was a good thing. And in Genesis 2:22 to 24, Adam says, "This is now bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man." Adam understood exactly what he was looking at. It was a good thing, and he was excited about what God had done. And then this verse that we are all familiar with is this passage that talks about this union. "For this cause a man shall leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they shall be one flesh." And so God's creative energy fashioned the woman to meet man's needs, and Adam was exhilarated with the result. And this union of this couple is to be a lifetime partnership. And one of the things we're going to talk about today, fellas, is that lifetime partnerships are not just going to materialize on their own. We need to have resolve and dedication to developing and building and improving and working on our most intimate relationship with our spouse. And Webster defines a partnership this way: a relationship resembling a legal partnership and usually involving close cooperation between the parties, having specific and joint rights and responsibilities. Having joint rights and responsibilities. Husband to the wife, wife to the husband. And this close, Webster describes this as close cooperation. Well, this is where give and take comes from in marriage. And how do we discover our rights and our responsibilities in our marriage partnership? How do we understand what those are? And so I'd like us to look at the book of Colossians for just a couple minutes, Colossians chapter 3, and let's mine out some of these things that create this basis or this platform for this marriage partnership to grow and to flourish. The first clue I'd like to suggest, and maybe you guys can put a one by it and circle it, and we'll just do that for each one of these. The context: my new life is in Christ. Put a one by that, because I want it to stand out in your mind. This is the first clue about how my relationship in this intimate partnership is going to grow, and that is the context. What is the context? Context is that which is all around me. If I were to say, what's the context of my speaking this morning, it would be, the context is probably 100 fellas sitting in this auditorium, and we're indoors, and all of the surrounding stuff around me, that's the context. That's where I'm finding myself at this moment. And we need to discover and understand what the context is for my life with my bride. And Colossians 3 tells us it. Starting in the second part of that passage: "Set your mind on the things above, not on the things on earth, for your life is hidden with Christ in God." That's the context. My life is hidden with Christ in God. And your wife's life is hidden in Christ with God. What's important about that? This Lawrence Larry Crabb quote sort of gives us an idea about what this context means. "Until I am aware that my needs are already met in Christ, I will be motivated by emptiness to meet my own needs. When by simple faith I accepted Christ's shed blood as full payment for my sins, I am brought into a relationship with an infinite being of love and purpose who fully satisfies my deepest needs for security and significance." Now, I'd like you to underline in your notes this next sentence: "Therefore, as a result of that, as a result of my life hidden in Christ, therefore, I am free from my self-centered preoccupation with my own needs. They're met. It is now possible for me to give to others out of my fullness, rather than needing to receive from others because of my emptiness. For the first time, I have the option of living selflessly. And it is because in Christ we're full. We're complete in Christ. And we come to our lifetime partner now with new abilities, with new capabilities, with new potentiality of being able to not be focused on what is needed for me, and now I can focus on what is the needs of my lifetime partner. Clue number two, put a two and circle it, guys. The transformation process. This is my new potential. And in Colossians 3:5, there's some things that we're going to glean from this as we think about it. Therefore, consider the members of your earthly body dead to immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, greed. Because these are the things we were. This is what our life was like before we're hidden in Christ. For it is account of these things that the wrath of God will come, and in them you all once walked when you were living in them. But now you also put them all aside. Anger, wrath, malice, slander, abusive speech. Any of that occur in your marriage? You know, that's the human nature part of it. You know, those are the things in marriage, in our lifetime partnership, that we have to put away. We can't have any of that. And we've got to rely on this new life we have in Christ to provide a new potentiality for us not to repeat those things. Because those are deeply imprinted habit patterns that have marked our lives. And he goes on to say, do not lie to one another, since you laid aside the old self with its practices and having put on the new self, who is, circle the word is there, guys, who is being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one who created him. Who is being renewed. And this is one, I think, of the things I oftentimes forget about. When irritations come into my life with my lifetime partner, when I become irritated and I lose the perspective that we're all just work in process, aren't we? And is there anybody here this morning that's arrived at perfection? At total Christ-likeness? We're all work in process. And we're work in process, and our spouse is work in process. But what's beautiful about what God has done for us is He's enabled us with a new toolkit. Not any longer going to be using things like intimidation and evil desires and greed and manipulation, those things which we used in our former life. We have now a new relational toolkit. And we're bringing into this idea that I'm a work in process and my wife is a work in process, and we are currently in this transformation process. What's the expectation in the new relational toolkit? In Colossians 3:12 it says, and so as those who have been chosen by God, holy and beloved, circle the word put on. Put on a heart of compassion. These are the things we're to do. We're to be working on putting on this new heart. Put on a heart of compassion. Kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience, bearing with one another and forgiving each other whoever has a complaint against anyone. And then at the top of the next page of your handout, and beyond all these, and again, circle this word, put on love. So this is the new relational toolkit that I have in my lifetime partnership. These are the things I'm to work on developing. Now, two times in this text, he says, put on these things, which means that God has given to us the responsibility to learn how to love, to practice doing loving things, using loving words. I myself find it really challenging and difficult at times to find the kinds of loving words that communicate to meet Jerry's deepest needs. And Paul is saying here that we need to learn how to do this. This needs to be a part of how we enter our lifetime partnership. And then finally, the last clue, number four, put a four and circle it, Colossians 3:18, finally it says, here now defines the marriage relationship, and the second sentence, husband, love your wives. There's the command for us to love our wives. Let's take a minute and let's do another handout. You have in your notes this thing called a couple's marriage mindset. If you would turn to it, it looks like this. It's the second handout. And again, I'm going to give you a minute or two to think about some of these things, but I want to introduce what this little handout is about. And I want to introduce the idea by saying to you guys that we all have filters. And we look at the world and we look at our marriage partner through a filter. And if this filter were round like this, there'd be no imperfections in the filter. And when I look through it at James here, I would see James, you know, the way James really is. But if I were to start skewing the filter, what happens to the clarity of the image? What happens?
You only see what you want to see.
You only see what you want to see. Thanks, Mike. What else?
Distortion.
You start seeing things and see, I think I'm seeing James right. My mind thinks I'm seeing James right, but what's happening with reality? Reality is something different. All right? And the problem with filters in our relationship with our marriage partner is we oftentimes don't recognize we have filters in operation. We don't realize that when we are looking at the other person, we're looking at them through the skewed worldly influence that has conformed my mind to look at things from a particular point of view. And I have this picture of James that's not real. Now, part of developing our intimacy with our spouse is how do we find these filters? How do we understand these filters? And we begin to start doing the opposite. Rather than it skewing up, we start bringing the filter down. This little marriage mindset is a little exercise I think you guys can use to start thinking about some of these things. All right, here is a list of 77 items on this page. Accepting, adaptable, aggressive, annoying, anxious, bitter, brave, calm. You sort of see the trend. There are some good qualities. There are some bad qualities. What I'd like to do is to give you a minute, and I want you to kind of preview the list. And I want you to think about your wife or your girlfriend and look at these qualities and pick some that depict her. All right, go. Take a minute here and just go through the list and identify some that you would say, yes, that's who I'm married to. All right, let's think about this for a little bit. What are some of the things you checked just from out there, you guys? You look at the list. What are some of the things you checked? What was that?
Intelligence.
Okay, good one. Trusting.
Helpful.
Good. Helpful.
Worried.
Giving. Okay. What's that? Okay. What was that?
Reactionary.
Okay. What are the thoughts? Dependable. Okay. Well, this group is inclined to just focus on the really quality, positive qualities, aren't we?
Well, I didn't have any unpredictable.
Unpredictable. Okay. Witty. Okay. Now, that's how you see her, or that's how this limited little exercise paints a view that you have of her. I wonder if that's real, or is that just the way that you see her? I mean, is that the way she really is, or is that just the way that your filter perceives her? Now, what if you were to give her this list and say, sweetheart, would you fill this out as you see me? How do you think that picture would look? Well, we ought to do that, right? Because I think if we're going to pull down filters and we're going to see things accurately, we need to be communicating on some of these things. There's an idea of subjectivity, and I want to ask you to write something down. I'm going to give you a definition of what it means to be subjective, because oftentimes we think of objective, subjective, the girl is subjective, the guy is objective. That's not how we're using the word this morning, subjectivity. So write this definition down. A subjective person tends to collect the negatives. A subjective person tends to collect the negatives and discount the positives. A subjective person tends to collect the negatives and discount the positives. What does that mean? It really means that most of us have some measure of subjectivity. What that means is my wife can do 10 great things for me and one negative, and what do I think about? What do I think about? The one negative, right? She said how wonderful I looked this morning. You know, when I walked out the door, she gave me a sweet kiss. She gave me a granola bar to walk out. She did all these wonderful things. She's behaving in this way which is completely consistent with our partnership. And one little thing, and the thing that I focus on is the negative thing. And guys, that's one way our filter gets distorted. Is because we're not consciously overcoming that tendency to bring that skewed perspective back in. Now, what an objective person does is he looks at things with equality, with equity. An objective person is able to understand, yes, there's one negative, but you know, there were 10 positives. Wow, the positive things are so great. You know, that's really who my wife is. So we need to kind of reshape our filter by thinking about who our wife is, who our spouse is, and understanding who she truly is. I would encourage you to take this little exercise home, and you can download it from the internet and have her. Oh, by the way, if you look on the back side of it, it says, here's a place for you to list those filters. And I see this quality when my spouse does blank, whatever it is that she sees. So it'd be interesting for you to determine how many negative ones there are. According to the instructions, it says there are equal number of negatives and positives. But when I did the totaling, it looked to me like there were about 30 negatives and 47 positives that I could identify. Filters. Being able to see each other as you really are. Intimacy doesn't just happen. It takes conscious effort to develop close, meaningful relationships. And once intimacy is established, it must be protected. This twofold emphasis is seen in John 10:10. And here's the quote. The thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy. Satan wants to destroy the closeness we have with God and others. I have come that they may have life and might have it to the full. And if you're not familiar with Phil Downer, Unlimited Partnership, that's a book where Phil quotes this idea about intimacy. For me, Thank you, John. I'm thinking about this idea of building and protecting intimate relationships. And I think about this from kind of the building part of that process. What does it mean to build an intimate partnership? There's three things I'm going to talk about today. The fourth one, I'm not going to talk about communication. And I would suggest that would be a real good area for some personal study. But what I'm going to talk about today are three things. One is blending our lives together. What does that look like to blend together with your spouse? I think you guys know what to do. We just haven't put words to it. And I'm going to give you some words for that. And then, secondly, understanding our own and our wives' intimacy needs. We need to be thinking about what are the things that my wife needs to be fulfilled in order for her to arrive at intimacy with me. I'm much more aware of the things my wife needs to fulfill in order for me to be intimate with her. But we need to be thinking about what she needs. And I'm going to offer some ways of thinking about that in a couple minutes. And then developing harmony and decision making. And I've thought about the many things we could have talked about, and I'll maybe share some stories from Cherry and me about why decision making, I think, is something that's worth thinking about in this area about building intimacy. And then we'll talk about protecting. But first, let's talk about building. Blending our lives together. Webster defines blending as to prepare by thoroughly intermingling different varieties or grades. Think about it like this. You have a glass of milk, and you want to make chocolate milk. And so you put the powder, the chocolate powder into the milk, and the milk turns brown, and you have chocolate milk. Have you lost anything in the process of creating chocolate milk? Has anything disappeared? Has anything been lost? What? Okay, well, the white, the color has changed, yeah, from light to dark. What's that? Individuality, all right. So there's a less emphasis on individuality and a more striking focus on the uniqueness of what's been created. Is the milk still milk? Milk's still milk. The chocolate's still chocolate. What we've done is we've blended two substances together, and out of it has come something pretty good. And I really like chocolate milk. So, you know, we take these... This idea into our marriage, and we're blending two people together so that what comes out is something better than we have individually. I've got a few thoughts for you guys about this idea of blending. And the first one is setting goals for your marriage together and discuss regularly. January of every year, Cherry and I take a weekend and we get off by ourselves and we have a goal planning, goal setting weekend. Not goals that I'm doing for work or ministry or anything like that. These are the goals that Cherry and I share in common. These are the things that we're going to work on together. And one of the most helpful things about that, guys, is it counteracts one of our tendencies. When's the most frequent time we tend to think the thought, you know, my marriage needs some work? When are we most likely to think that thought? Okay, when you're not together, I'm looking for something else. When you've got a problem, absolutely. When something needs to be fixed. When something needs to be fixed in my marriage, that's when I'm most inclined to think about putting time and effort and energy into working on that intimate relationship. And realizing that's true about most of us, if we'll take some time and sit down and with our wife and say, Cherry, sweetie, let's think about the things that are important to us. What do we want to work on? Because you know what is unique about that is we don't have this cloud of tension and these issues of conflict that we're trying to wade through in order to get a meeting of the minds. When we do it without tension and conflict, we can think about things that are sometimes not thinkable. Some of the goals, like these filters, these ideas about filters, this whole question about intimacy. You know, have you in the last few years asked your wife for an appraisal and assessment of how intimate she feels with you? You know, most of us run from those kind of questions because they're too deep, they're too personal, they're scary. Setting goals is a great way of doing that. Discovering common points of connection. These are things like hobbies. Vacations, things that you like to do together, preferences that you have, or similar passions. And I'm going to talk in a couple minutes about ministry, so I'm not really going to make much of a comment about that, but in Cherry's in my life, ministry is a big connecting point for us. Philosophically, theologically, emotionally, I mean, we connect on the same wavelength. And so it's a real good point of this idea about a connecting point. Build the gift talent overlaps. This is an idea where you have a gift and your wife has a gift. And when you put those gifts together, there's some synergy that's going on with them. And let me give an example of how this works in Cherry's in my life. My wife clearly has the gift of hospitality. She loves to practice hospitality. And so
at least probably no less than 3 or 4 times a year, we do big events at our house where a ministry comes over, and Cherry, she's in the full manifestation of that gift. It is flowing. All I have to do is sit on the sidelines and just simply say, yep, I'm married to her. I'm reaping the benefit, you know, the collateral benefit of that. She's in her glory in that because that's her gifting. And so we found a way to harmonize that. We found a way to, my gift would be probably more along the line of teaching or something. And so we harmonize in that area, and I give her opportunity to express that gift. And so we're looking for areas where gift and talent overlap can be maximized. Maximize the encouragement and energy derived from projects accomplished together. There's so much value, guys, to having completed something with your wife, to have done something with her, to have made something with her. And Cherry and I decided a couple years ago that we were going to put flagstone steps along the side of our house, and not realizing how really difficult that was to do, we decided to tackle that ourselves during the heat of the summer. And you know, we worked on it for the whole summer. And finally, at the end, we finished it by the end of the summer. There is hardly a time when we go out and walk on that flagstone set of steps together that one of us doesn't comment about how meaningful that was. The memory of working on that together. A goal accomplished can add huge amount of intimacy. This next question, what kinds of things do you do best together and how do you accomplish goals, bring joy and encouragement and a sense of unity? I'd like you to write the word homework by that. That's for you guys to do when you get home with your sweetheart. Do you have a sense of what time we're supposed to stop? I should have looked at that. 9:30? 9:15? All right, write the word homework by that, and I'll leave that for you guys. Understanding our partner's intimacy needs. Understanding our partner's intimacy needs. Let me take a little time on this. I don't have a handout in your notes, so you are just going to have to look at it on the screen. And I would encourage you guys to invest in either one of these two resources, either Intimate Encounters by David and Teresa Ferguson, or alternatively, Unlimited Partnership by Phil Downer. Yep. Intimate Encounters is a DVD set of materials. It comes with a workbook, and it's by David Ferguson, and these are all commercially available, so you can get them at bookstores and order them online and Google and get them. Or the book written by Phil Downer, Unlimited Partnership. David Ferguson. Yeah, the video is actually done by David and Teresa. David's the kind of the main speaker, but Teresa adds a lot of context and a lot of humor because she gives the real stories behind what David's really like, and it's great content on what two very unlikely people look like when they get married. Very, very different people. But they've developed this idea of top 10 intimacy needs, and I'm introducing it here to you guys on the screen in hopes that I'll stimulate you to think about going and getting one of these sets of materials. So for copyright laws, I'm not giving you a copy of it. The rest of the stuff you can get yourself. Top 10 intimacy needs. These are basic needs that we must fulfill and meet before we can have intimacy with our partner. These are basic needs we must meet in order to feel intimate or close to our lifetime partner. Now let's look at some of them together. And I want you to think about this for a moment from your point of view. What are the kinds of things up here that describe you? For you to feel fulfilled and close, let's look at some of these kinds of things. For example, appreciation. Appreciation is defined here to communicate with words and feelings a personal gratefulness for another. To communicate with words and feelings a personal gratefulness for another. Do you have that? In order for you to feel close in a friendship, is that, do you have the need to feel appreciated? When you go to work 10 hours a day and you come home in the evening, do you feel a strong need for your wife to say thank you for going to work for me today? Do you have this particular need? What about attention? Attention is to take thought of another and convey appropriate interest and support to enter into another's world. To take thought of another and convey appropriate interest and support to enter into another's world. I hardly know of a child that doesn't have this kind of need. The need for attention from a dad. Or encouragement. To urge forward and positively persuade toward a goal. To urge forward and positively persuade toward a goal. Well, this is a big one for Cherry. She just draws strength from encouragement. So when I will say something to her about how much I appreciate the fact that she's investing time working with the girls of the fellows in our ministry, and I reward her and I encourage her by saying how much I appreciate that, how much I admire it. There's so many ways we can say that. I admire what you do with our kids, or I admire the way that you keep our house. Now, I don't know how you guys do this in your own personal world, but in my world, it looks like this. Somewhere around Thursday or Friday, the laundry fairy shows up and magically restores the drawers in my armoire with socks and t-shirts and things like that. Magically. I rarely even notice it's being done. It's imperceptible to the human eye. The fairies are doing it. Right? Well, it's really not the fairies, is it? I mean, it's my devoted life partner who is, without being asked, without being reminded, without being manipulated or any of that, she's doing this because of what? The rules? The law? What is she doing it for? Love. She admires me. You know, she enjoys our partnership. And so I try to say, it's now a bit of a game, I'll go in and I'll try to notice the little things that she's done that the average person would miss. Hey, someone vacuumed that. This carpet looks like it's been vacuumed. Or, you know, I noticed that the dishes are done. And something which is building on this intimacy need that she has to feel encouraged. And so, guys, I think for me at least, it's becoming a champion of those areas which fill her emotional tank, that give her delight and security, that welcomes in the close emotional bond which we're trying to build together. And for her, it's an area of encouragement. And for me, it's an area of appreciation. And that's why I put it. I mean, nothing really encourages me more than for her to say, thank you for going to work. Thank you for this week's paycheck. Thank you for doing the lawns. Thank you for taking an interest in this thing or that thing. And so she will say things like to me, like, I really admire you for doing that. Now, you guys wouldn't really. That wouldn't relate to you. I mean, you wouldn't think too much about that. But, you know, between me and her, because we're blending and we're trying to, you know, work on intimacy, when she appreciates me and when she expresses that she's admiring something in me, it brings closeness in our relationship. Security. Confidence of harmony in relationships. Free from harm. Confidence of harmony. How many of you guys think that very likely security is one of your wife's intimacy needs? Every single one of us should raise our hands. What do these words sound like to you? We're in an argument and I say these words. I'm thinking about divorce. Yeah, the thought of divorce had come into my mind. I thought about it. You know, other people are doing it. I'm thinking about that. What do those words mean? What do you think those words mean? As it relates to this idea of security. What do those words mean? Good. Some others. What do those words accomplish? Yeah, they're killing her spirit. They are implanting in her mind the contingent thought you might actually do what you're talking about. Because 50% of all marriages end in divorce, and if you use those words, you might just be very well sowing the seeds of those kind of doubts. We made a commitment, Jerry and me, and this is later in the notes, and I'll just say it now, and then you guys can, we'll just pass by it then. I made a promise to Cherry. I will never threaten, use the words of divorce, imply, implicate, hint at, or in any way give her the idea under any set of circumstances that I am anything but 100% committed to this marriage. And I have promised to her, I held her hands, looked her in the eye, and said, "Sweetie, I swear to you, I promise you, I will never threaten those words." Because she has this need of security. And if I am saying things or talking in... You don't have to use those words, by the way, to create those kind of doubts, do you? Let's be honest. We don't have to say, we don't have to actually threaten the idea of divorce in order to create, to sow the seed of that kind of thing. Yeah. Security. We need to be building these things. Now, the way this works is you go through it the first time and you give a copy of this to your wife and you have a copy and then you go through it and you say, what are my intimacy needs? Because what you want to do with this little exercise is you want to talk about the things that are important to you. And then you speculate on what you think her intimacy needs are, and that's where the spouse column comes. So, you know, this column is for you to identify your needs, and then this column is for her. And she does the very same thing. She has one of these herself. And so she's going to write down her intimacy needs as she perceives herself, and she's going to then think about you. What do you think you do with those two pieces of paper? You correlate them, right? So you say, you know, sweetie, what I think about you is you need approval. And she says, I've never needed approval today in my life. That's the absolute least thing on my list. And you learn something new. Now, you know, to me, I think that what lifetime partnership is, it's an investigation process. You need to become a student of your wives. We need to become a learner and investigate new and different ways of learning more and deeper things about her. And so when she says, hey, I think that you need approval, and she says, that's not on my list, that's not what I'm thinking about, you need to try to figure out why you think that way. Because what's happening with your filter? It looks like this. You know, your filter is all skewed because for whatever the reason, we haven't identified what her needs are. And so give her an opportunity to then, you know, worst thing we can say is you say, I think you need approval as an embassy need, and she doesn't, and she says, no, I don't. And then you say what? Yes, you do. Just the other day I saw you. You know, let her be the owner of what her intimacy needs are. These are the way she feels about how she responds and thinks and emotionally as an emotional being. Your job is to plummet the depths of how she thinks about that. How does she relate on that basis? What's the importance of that? When she says, I need security, I'll be real surprised if many of them don't have this as one of them. Accept attention is one of Cherry's acceptance. Lots of rich conversation about that. You can spend two or three date nights taking one of those and going into depth on how she thinks about it. How does she feel about it? How can you take that idea of attention and build it to the maximum in her life? What can you do? Those would be the questions, guys, that we ought to be asking when we're a student of our wives. How can I address that need in your life more effectively?
This is an excerpt from which book?
It is both books, Intimate Encounters and Unlimited Partnership. You'll find it in both places. Any thought about that for a moment? Let's take inventory here. Any questions about how to use that as a tool? You know where to go get it.
I think one thing we need to be careful of is, as guys, a lot of times we think, okay, check, check, check. And I got this wired, and then tomorrow it's going to change. And that's the hard part, is this is not a, it's a moving target, and it's changing depending on what kind of day she has.
Yeah. And Keith, that's why it makes it so exciting. Because today you're working off of one inventory, tomorrow it may look different. You know, there'll be some similarities, but there'll be a lot of things that, you know, are new virgin territory we get to go after. You know, and becoming a fulfillment of our life's mate. Yeah, it is. Filters change, by the way, based on our culture. You know, so our filter is constantly being influenced. You know, people who get divorced, we hear about it in our workplace. We start to almost accept it as a part of commonplace, don't we? When we get comfortable with the idea of divorce. How many of you guys would do whatever you absolutely had to do if a neighbor of yours came and told you that his wife had left him and wants a divorce? How many of you would do whatever it took to go over and do crisis intervention? Step into the gap. We become culturally anesthetized by what's going on in our culture. In divorce, everybody's getting divorced. Okay, so, you know, Joe and Sally here are getting a divorce. We sort of accept it. Instead of being the catalytic influence of Christ in me in the world, we become a little bit anesthetized by the pain that's going on in the world. Any other thoughts?
This thought, when you were bringing up the approval part of it, I thought about days that I'd go to work and my boss would say, you know, you've done a really good job today. I really appreciate it. And it means something, but it doesn't. But when you go home and you can look at your spouse and say, I really appreciate you fixing dinner for me tonight or something, you don't know what's happened in her day. But a lot of times, just a quick word like that will absolutely, I mean, the look on her face, is just, I mean, you can tell you've just made her day.
Yeah.
And it's such a simple thing to do, and it's the one thing that as men, we forget most of the time because we're busy in what's happened at work, or we're thinking about we've got to go home and get the grass cut, and, you know, 10 seconds out of our day can absolutely change.
Yeah.
You know, her whole day.
Yeah. You know, we could make a profound difference in our marriages if we became champion of certain kinds of things. One is the intimacy needs. Making sure that that all show up on our personal agenda of this year's, you know, goals for me is to meet my wife's intimacy needs and to find creative and new ways of doing it. We send messages to people all the time. Messages with our words, messages with our behaviors. Even now, when I elevate my voice to you, I'm sending you a message that says, what I'm saying, I really want you guys to listen to. I'm giving you that subtle message. So I use body language. We use body language. We use words. We use the tone. You know, in my marriage, when Cherry and I are having a conflict, and I hope I'm not being too terribly transparent with you, but because we all have conflicts in our marriage, the number one thing I have to check in my spirit at the onset is tone. I've got to consciously go down an octave, because if I don't, then Cherry's so sensitive to my spirit that she picks up these messages from me. And what I don't want to do is I don't want to send hurtful messages when we're trying to resolve a conflict. And so I know in my own kind of way of communicating with Cherry, okay, I think this thought, all right, let's drop it down an octave. And then we proceed into the issue that we have to resolve. You guys need to figure out what are those destructive things you do coming from this filter, you know, looking like this, what are the things that you need to do in order to pull that back into shape, not to hurt or damage your personal partnership. These kinds of messages are things like affectionate caring, I care about you. You know, that message that we send to our wives kind of comes out like this. You're going to be late getting home from the office, you call her on the cell phone and give her a heads up. You know, I call Cherry on the phone and I'm communicating with her through the day, I try to say no less than 3 or 4 times a day, I really love you. I try to say at the close of every single phone call, I love you. I try to practice that. I need to say that over and over because I need to be reminded that that is the thing that God wants me to give my wife, love. And so I need to convey those messages to her. I need to be preoccupied with how I formulate those messages. Vulnerable communication communicates, I trust you. So there are times when I come home from the office that I'll share with her some area of disappointment that I'll have or frustration. I don't try to load her up with negative stuff from the office, but I'll try to share something with her that conveys I really had a hard day. And my wife is so sensitive to it. When she does that, I'll look out the corner of my eye and she's got a pillow she's bringing or a glass of iced tea or something. See, we're working on learning how to harmonize together. So when we're sending one another a message, the other's trying to have the detectors up that said, what does that message mean and how can I look after that message? Joint accomplishment sends the message, I need you. I like working on things with you. Mutual giving means I love you. We're sending those messages to our wives all the time. Last thing in this area that Cherry and I found really, I think, helpful for us is this idea of developing harmony in decision making. And when I asked Cherry the other night, I was kind of preparing some of my personal thoughts on the workshop, and I said, sweetie, what's important to you about that? She said these very profound words, and so I'm quoting her. She said, life is a series of decisions. Oh, that's unbelievable. I mean, I will never forget that. I'm going to write that on a verse card, and I'm going to put it in my verses, and I'm going to memorize it for a couple reasons. One is, I want my wife to know that I admire her intelligence. The thing that she could put that conceptual thought down in such a succinct fashion that I could get a handle on, what does this really mean, develop harmony in decision making? Well, life is just a series of decisions. We're making them all the time. Have dinner at home, have dinner out. Go to McDonald's, go to Burger King. I mean, we're making decisions all the time. And how are we doing in harmonizing those decisions we make together. I think there's some things, guys, that we can do about that. One is this idea of shared information. Who's the best person at gathering information? This has to do with kind of the threshold for information. There are things that go on in our house that I don't have any measure of competency in. I'll be bluntly obvious. What soap for our washing machine, I have no measure of competency to be making that decision. Well, there's a threshold of information there. And so Cherry and I know how we harmonize when we make decisions. And a couple years ago, we were thinking we need to replace one of our cars. We're thinking about buying a truck. And so I know how she operates. And so she doesn't have, by her own admission, she doesn't have not only competency in that area, but a lot of interest in it. And so for me, I realized how we harmonized best together is I'll introduce the subject. Sweetie, I'm thinking about trading the van in on a truck. Not really getting ready to make a decision on it today, but just wanted you to know I'm thinking about it. So at that point, I have introduced the subject matter. She knows a future conversation is going to come about. So I am already playing to areas of strength with her. So a few weeks later, I say, you know, I think some of the advantages of a truck are X, Y, and Z. And because she's sensitive to the cues, she knows what I'm doing. So she says, I think you should investigate it. So rather than it being contentious, what we're doing is we're starting to appeal to each other in the area of harmonizing on this way of making a decision. And so we go at this way of communicating two or three times, and finally it emerges where we need to sit down and have now a robust conversation about it. And so I present to her the facts, and we talk about whether or not it's the right time to do this and the circumstances and all that. And we made a decision on it. And Cherry looks back at that decision we made, and she said, I felt so involved, and I felt so honored because you knew how I process information and you respected that process. Now, I could have walked in with a color glossy Ford brochure and said, let's go down and get the truck today. You know, and but the way we approached it, because of how it harmonized, we took that approach. And she felt honored, respected, and included. Don't let the other person be blindsided by springing decisions on them. You're rushing home from work and you think you want to go out for dinner, and so on the spur of the moment you're throwing that idea on the table, you know, throw it up there and see if it sticks. And those kinds of things don't work well in my marriage, at least. Respect the other person's way of processing that information. Don't let the other person blindside it. I always try to give Cherry as much advance notice on things I'm thinking about as I can. Thus the need for planning weekends. Thus the need for date nights. To be able to convey those when you have time to do them orderly and properly. Prayerfully defer to each other's strengths. Seek for agreement and consensus in major decisions. And I don't know of a decision that Cherry and I have made that we haven't looked for consensus. There have been a few that we have made, that we have agreed on, that I have made, but we have agreed on, if you get that, you know. One is the direction of our ministry, that Cherry's allowed me to make certain decisions on that. And she accepts that as we are in agreement about that, even though I'm fundamentally being the one who's given leadership and drive and direction to it. Let's talk for a little bit about guarding your intimate partnership. And I want to talk about three things: of fair-proofing your partnership, properly prioritizing the extended family relationships, and checking competing loyalties. A fair-proofing your marriage. Let's take a look at this threats inventory. It's in your notes. Should be the last handout that you have. You know, the worldview on marriage is that it is a disposable relationship that's disposable. You can end it for no reason at all. You don't need a reason. It's the fact that you make a commitment doesn't have any application. It's disposable. And we get our personal filters anesthetized by those messages. And so affair-proofing our marriage isn't at the top 10 of the things that we're thinking about, the way we're processing, the way we're living our lives. And either we think it's not important, or we get an autopilot and it doesn't ever filter down into our thinking. And I'd like you guys to look at this threat inventory for just a minute. And I'd like you to think about some things. The top part of the slide says this is a list of the most common threats to marriage. Check all that apply. Take a second, and on your inventory, just put a check where you think there might be some measure of vulnerability. Now, some of these are things that are within your control, and some of these things are not within your control. For example, a major illness may not be within your control. A death in a family, a grief, may not be within your control. But there are some there that are in your control. What are some of the things you guys checked? What are some of the things that you think you might have some vulnerability on? There may be some measure of threat. I'm not saying you're going to chunk your marriage. I'm saying that your marriage might be attacked by one of these things. Yeah.
Busy schedule, which leads to frequent communication breakdowns, because we're not talking about what our schedules look like and how they match up.
Busy schedules that lead to a communication breakdown because we're not talking about, you know, who's going where. Husband works the night shift, wife works the day shift. I mean, two ships passing in the night. All right. Or we're so preoccupied. Yeah, Tex. Rebellious child. That's something you may or may not have any control over, right? I mean, you may not be able to do something about that. It may be a threat that you recognize about your marriage. What else? What's that? Yeah, extended family. We're going to talk about that in just a minute, because I think how we deal with our extended family is really hugely important to lifetime partnership. That's a great comment. Joel, you had a comment. Okay. An autistic child. That very definitely. Yeah. Career crisis. I was fired one time. I was the head of our company's real estate operation. I've worked for this guy now for 25 years now, but in my early tenure with him, he fired me, and I thought that was really disrespectful of my loyalty to him, but we've become great friends over the years. But, you know, for the moments that I was dealing with that, being fired and all of the personal issues that come along with that, you know, in my heart there was this raging feeling of hate. I wanted him to fail in the worst way. And a friend of mine came up and said, you know, I'll never let another person ruin my life by causing me to hate them. And I said, what? I'll never let another person ruin my life by causing me to hate them. He said, well, that's a famous quote. I'd never heard that before. For every day, for a year, I memorized that sentence and I quoted that to myself every single day. I'll not let him ruin my life by causing me to hate him. And in my heart, I was resolved with God to deal with that. Career crisis can be. What about retirement? It's just another form of career crisis. This is a career crisis that she's having, not that you're having. Unemployment is the career crisis you have. And retirement is the career crisis she has. Jerry and I are getting close to that. And we're talking about, what is retirement going to look like? How are we going to make these decisions? How are we working? What's our plan? How are we communicating on it? We're starting to communicate a lot on it. So we think we have it, so we can get a handle on it. I don't want to let that become a crisis for us. What about anybody else? Anybody else see a threat in that list? How many of you have personal secretaries? There's a threat, guys. Whether you are attracted to her and whether you have something, you know, well-developed skills, that is a threat. And we ought to recognize the fact that we, in the work environment, when there are women around us, they pose a threat on our marriage, they pose a threat on us personally, and we need to have the disciplines in our culture that allow us to deal with those threats, to mitigate those threats. For example, in my office, I never shut the door with my secretary. Never. I never take my secretary out to lunch when I'm not taking some other colleague in our office. It is always a group. I never do anything with my secretary that I don't call Cherry on in advance and talk with her about it so she understands the business purposes for it and invite her to come along. There's a threat that I've recognized on my marriage that is not worth me not addressing. I've addressed that threat. I can't do anything about eliminating it. It's there. But I address it as though it was as real and having as much possibility of happening. And I build these things to not allow that to happen. Bruce.
You know, I think in the ministry, it's the same thing of counseling women, taking them into your confidence or their into you about your wife. Boy, that, you know, there's a real, even worse situation than this having sex.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
There's so many emotions flying and those kinds
yeah.
of things. Boy, I've just seen many a man go down the tube because of that.
Yeah.
Dropping the guard.
Yeah, counseling. Counseling a woman by yourself. Cherry and I do a lot of marriage counseling, and we always do it together. Or I'll do one-on-one with the fella. But we never expose ourselves to the risk of being in a situation with the person of the opposite sex. We never expose ourselves to the risk. Doesn't matter whether it's likely to happen or not. It's a risk, and we recognize it as a risk. How many of you guys would say, in this century, the internet is perhaps the most intrusive vulnerability for men in the area of fidelity of anything that could be possibly around us? How many of you guys think that's a real risk? It is absolutely staggering. The impact that have. And your wife, it can break intimacy with her, erode security and confidence in you, and undermine your credibility, from which it is very hard to regain that. Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and say, I've been working on this, and I'm getting there, but spiritually, it's what I would like to do in my life. For a long time, you know, praying for her.
Yeah.
Praying for her. That if I knew that she had something going on that, you know, she needed help with. But it's hard to do.
Yeah. His comment was achieving spiritual unity and closeness. I'm going to talk about that kind of in a couple minutes about how Cherry and I go about doing that. But if you don't have it and you're not working on it, it's a threat. You know, if you're not consciously aware of your wife's intimacy needs and you're not working on those, there's a threat. Those are all threats.
It's hard for her to come alongside of you and come alongside of her.
You could take some time. The last part of this chart is, what are the things that are really working well in your marriage? Those are nice to think about. They're good to think about. They're encouraging. And I'm not going to kind of go over them now, but this would be a great another thing to serve as a communication tool with your wife, particularly if you lead off with, "Sweetie, these are the things I really have seen us doing well together, and I want to figure out how we can make those even better." We don't address and think about of fair-proofing our partnerships because we don't think about them, or because we have this idea that it is not important. And the way we process it's not important is by not paying attention to the things that are possible threats for us. Because we think we're not vulnerable. We think we're not going to be influenced. We don't recognize those threats. We have inaccurate assumptions about the condition of our own marriage. What does that mean? What does it mean to have an inaccurate assumption about the condition of our own marriage? What does that mean? What do you think it means? Yeah. Keith, I don't know what's going on and I'm happy about it. Because that stems from if she's not complaining, she's probably what? Happy. Yeah. And I'm operating on a filter that looks like this. And I'm happy about it. And that's inaccurate assumptions. And then we bought into some cultural norms and some permissive standards about what we say, what we watch, and how we conduct ourselves with each other. A great resource on this is Loving Your Marriage Enough to Protect It. I've had a number of our guys read it by Jerry Jenkins. It's a great book on protecting your marriage. Prioritizing extended family relationships. I think I'm going to let that one go. I want to jump down to developing spiritual unity and oneness. There's so much that I'm encouraged about thinking about and thinking about developing spiritual unity. A couple things that I want to say to you guys about this. One is this verse, honor your wife as a joint heir of the grace of God. 1 Peter 3:7-8. Show her honor as a fellow heir of grace. Show her honor. Honor her. And I am just delighted to be able to share with my friends about my wife. She's so great. The things that she does for me, I love to tell guys about it, to brag on her and to honor her, and to, when we're talking to each other, to appreciate deeply the things that I notice about her, and to help me learn to recognize more. And so, guys, that is a great challenge for us, is to honor our wives. And it, when we do that, it contributes to a feeling of unity. And this idea that I have here on the back page called Shared or Common Calling in Ministry would be probably the thing that I would encourage you guys to think about the most. Our churches are prepared to put our wives to work. You and me are their spiritual leaders. And Cherry and I made a decision some years ago that we would always check back to what God had for us to do before we took any assignment from any place. Whether it's a civic event, whether it's church leadership roles or anything like that, we would double check back against what our calling is. And Cherry and I have written over the years and worked on it a calling statement which personifies what we feel like God has called us to do. And so when we're called upon on a work thing or a spiritual thing, we check back against that calling to have community. And in this area of shared spiritual oneness, which for me over the years has been very challenging to get my arms around, what does it mean to have shared spiritual oneness with Cherry? And I finally come down to some thoughts like this. One is the things that we can participate in together that create this shared oneness. Things like worship as a couple, devotional times. Today, in these days, Cherry and I have our quiet times together. We're doing them separately, but we do them sitting together. Because we like the sensation of being in each other's presence. When I look across and see her praying or reading some scripture or taking a note, and not just participating together, but the conveyance of that information to each other. And so sharing with each other what God has said. My wife gets so much security out of hearing me share what I got out of my quiet time. It builds spiritual unity for her. And so I recognize that when I'm sharing with her, then I am communicating on a plane for spiritual oneness for us. And you guys can probably find the things that work for you. Not one thing done routinely, but a variety of things done together is our common goal in this area. Doing a variety of things that contribute to a feeling of oneness. I'm going to stop there, guys, and encourage you to take a couple minutes, and there is some evaluation forms here. Mike, I don't know if you'd be willing to pass these out to fellas. We've been encouraged to invite your feedback on the workshops, what you like, what you'd like to see changed, and I'd invite you guys, it would be a help to me personally if you could be honest and candid about, you know, if you have an observation you'd like me to know about it, please put that down in there, and for the conference. Any questions? Yes, Keith. We'll just end with some questions.
Do you have any suggestions on how to just start a conversation with your wife? I'm retired now, and I have more time with my wife, but I tend to be quiet and you know, just enjoy being with her. And I really like to develop a better habit of just talking with her.
Some things that have worked for us in the area of content has been devotional guides for couples. I've been sort of kind of on the hunt in more recent years to kind of collect as many different devotional guides designed for couples as I can. And that's a great source of different kinds of subjects to talk about. And when we read those to each other and talk about them, it provides a starting point, a launching point. And I would offer that as a suggestion. And his question is, do we have ideas that, you know, can be helpful in initiating deeper levels of communication with our wives? Anybody here else have an idea about that? What do you do? So, you know, Keith, I don't know if you've ever thought about, you know, goal planning times. Because if you think about goals, you can set some. Hey, you know, I'd like to talk about some of these subjects. I would definitely suggest that you volunteer to lead the workshop next year on improving your lifetime partnership, because you and your wife are going to get lots of opportunity to talk about these kinds of things. But just that kind of devotional guides and things like that. Anybody else have a question? Royce, yes.
You got a name of one of these devotional guides for couples that you've read, Mike?
My favorite at the moment is actually called Devotions for Couples. That's actually the name of it, Devotions for Couples. And I can't remember the author. I apologize. But Mardell's or your Christian bookstore can look it up. Good one, really short, always topics on communicating. Generally a subject on personal intimacy, so you'll find lots of good content there. Up here.
From Larry
Krabs? Yes. It's his counseling book. I am forgetting that book's name, but I can look it up, and it's his book on counseling.
Okay.
It may be actually entitled Counseling. Does anybody know the name of Larry Krabs' book on counseling? Yeah, that may be it. So, and someone else had a question back here.
Where do you want the evaluation?
I think you could just leave them in your seat. I think someone will pick them up. Yes, question in the back.
When you were talking about bringing your wife into the decision, you used an idea about that even Kim Holmes saying a word to God, giving her a warning that we're going to be going out to dinner. I kind of find it challenging. You get up to about 20 years of marriage. I mean, where does the surprise and the adventure of saying, guess what we're going to do, and being a little, you know, mixing that in with the spontaneous, where you think as you get older, they'd rather not, that would not be the case, or you have that in your own marriage, where you bring an element of that in where you don't discuss it, and here's what we're going to do, and it's more of a surprise that they like that, or...
Yeah. That's a great question. It has to do with where's the role for spontaneity in your marriage? You know, why does everything have to be pre-planned and put out, you know, long term, or is there a place for spontaneity? And Jerry really likes spontaneity. And so for her, I think she sort of keeps sort of one eye sort of Dan may say tonight, let's go out for a quick bite. So she's sort of climatized to the idea that, you know, we may introduce something new. And so my wife happens to relate to that really well. So I think it's very personal. It depends on, you know, what is going on with your own wife. My comment really in that area is more that when Cherry's blindsided by the fact that I'm going to be late, and I know I'm going to be late, and I have failed to be able to communicate timely enough that, then she feels like I'm taking advantage in not being respectful of her role in our partnership. And that's where I'm particularly on point there. So, well, guys, thank you very much. I'll stick around for a little bit and would love to chat with you. And we'll just be done.